Ukraine steps up its attacks inside Russia, as well as Russian-held territories in the country's eastern regions. Sudan's army suspends its participation in the Saudi-backed talks with the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces to end months of fighting. And the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command says five of its members have been killed in a blast in Lebanon. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Ukraine has stepped up its attacks inside Russia as well as Russian-held territories in the country's eastern regions. Moscow, installed official in the Flashpoint Luhansk region, says shelling of a village left at least four civilians dead and over a dozen others injured. Inside Russia, authorities say four people were injured in Ukrainian shelling of a border town. The attacks reportedly targeted homes, the school, as well as industrial facilities. Separately, a Ukrainian drone sparked the fire at an oil refinery in southern Russia. Local officials say the blaze was soon extinguished and left no casualties. There was no immediate information on who launched the drone, but Moscow has accused Kiev of such attacks in recent weeks. There were similar drone attacks on Moscow on Tuesday, which Russian President Vladimir Putin described as terrorist acts.
We already mentioned the possibility of carrying strikes against decision-making centers. And of course, one of them is the headquarters of Ukrainian military intelligence, which we attacked 2 or 3 days ago. In response, the Kyiv regime chose another route. They are trying to scare Russia, scaring the people of Russia, and carrying out strikes against residential buildings. This is a clear sign of terrorist activity.
Tuesday's strikes targeted several areas, including a suburb where the Russian president has an official residence. The Kremlin says at least two people were injured during the assault, but most of the drones were intercepted by the country's air defenses. The Ukrainian presidential aide has denied Kiev's involvement in the attacks, but said that his country was, quote, enjoying watching events and forecast more to come. Divisions are growing in the EU over the bloc's relentless military support for Ukraine. EU member Hungary favors peace negotiations, and that stance is creating tensions, as our Brussels correspondent Jerome Hughes now reports.
EU leaders accuse the Hungarian government of casting democratic values aside with respect to judicial reforms and press freedom. However, analysts say their real issue is that Budapest is not towing the line with respect to the war in Ukraine. EU affairs ministers met on Tuesday to debate so-called EU values in Hungary. On her way into the meeting, Hungarian Justice Minister Judit Varga slated the European Parliament for criticising her government.
Minister Varga says that the European Parliament does not respect EU values, does not respect democracy in Hungary, does not respect rule of law.
The EU has so far spent €10 billion on weapons for Ukraine. EU nation Hungary is against the policy, and that seriously irks Brussels and Washington. Experts say Prime Minister Orban is correct to suggest the EU is concentrating too much on propelling the Ukraine war.
He definitely has a point, because here in Brussels you hear people saying, OK, it's always about Ukraine, it's Ukraine this, Ukraine that. But we should not forget the Palestinians in Gaza. We should not forget the Syrians. We should not forget the Sudanese.
It's clear the Hungarian government is a major thorn in the side of the EU project at present. However, Eurosceptic parties in other member states are on course to make significant gains in forthcoming elections, helped on by the cost of living crisis. Therefore, the problems might only be starting for the establishment here. Jerome Hughes at the EU Affairs Ministers' meeting, Brussels.
Relations between Russia and Germany have hit a new low, as Germany says it will drastically reduce Russia's diplomatic presence on its soil. The German Foreign Ministry said it has decided to withdraw consent for the operation of four of the five Russian consulates currently operating in the country by November. It comes after Moscow last week announced a limit on the number of German government officials allowed in Russia. Two countries have already had very tense ties over Germany's military support for Ukraine. The UK has the highest food inflation rate in the industrialized world. According to researchers at the London School of Economics, extra barriers on food imports from the European Union since the UK left the bloc has been an important factor. Said Purza has more from London.
It's no secret now that you don't get much for a pound in Britain these days, and households are the ones feeling the pain.
the food price, they went up. You can't buy lots of stuff now. You need to reduce.
It is absolutely increase in high level. They increase the market, 10-20p every single day almost.
The 19% food inflation here remains at the highest levels in over four decades, meaning an even greater squeeze on the budgets of low-income families. One of the drivers of inflation, new research shows, Brexit.
What is clear, and I would agree with that, is that Brexit has lowered people's living standards. All right? We voted for this nonsense, and now people are beginning to regret it. But it's a little bit too late.
The government admits the costs are getting out of control and is working with food producers, farmers, and supermarkets to explore ways to reduce the pressure on households and to find out if middle companies are taking out too much profit. Trade unions say higher costs are not trickling down to the workers. While there have been strikes and higher pay settlements with some, the gap between people's pay and price increases is substantial.
What's happened, of course, is this year people have taken wage rises that are below inflation. That means that their living standards are falling. So next year, guess what? They're going to try to catch up. And that's why it's going to be more persistent than a lot of central banks thought and a lot of people in the markets thought.
The UK's central bank has increased interest rates 12 times now to try and tame inflation, but the rate is still higher here than in all G7 nations. And that has meant more people falling on hard times. Today, one in seven Britons is skipping meals due to the rising cost of living.
So many people not being able to afford food or having to skip meals is a sobering thought in a wealthy economy like the UK's. But it's the reality of the inflation crisis and of post-Brexit Britain. Saeed Pariza, London.
Sudanese government official says the country's army has suspended its participation in the Saudi-backed truce talks with the paramilitary rapid support forces. The official said the decision was taken in light of repeated breaches of ceasefire by the paramilitary group. He said the RSF also failed to implement the provision which required their withdrawal from hospitals and residential buildings. The new development comes after U.S. and Saudi mediators on Sunday announced that the warring sides had agreed to extend the humanitarian truce by another 5 days. Despite peace efforts, fighting continued unabated in the African country, with the army and the RSF trading blame over truce violations. Violence broke out in the country in mid-April over the proposed integration of the RSF into the regular army. Hundreds of people have lost their lives ever since. Five Palestinian fighters have been killed in a blast in Lebanon near the border with Syria. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine command said that the explosion also left 10 of its members injured, with two in critical condition. The blast took place in Bekaa Valley in the early hours of Wednesday. Some Palestinian and Lebanese security sources said the deaths were the result of explosives and ammunition while they were being moved. The group has carried out several operations against Israel in the past. Israeli settlers backed by regime forces have carried out yet another raid on the occupied West Bank. Local Palestinian sources say that the settlers fired live rounds indiscriminately at homes in Jadud village, south of the city of Nablus. Sources say Palestinian youths tried to defend the village, leading to an exchange of fire that is still ongoing. Some Palestinians have sustained injuries so far. Zionist settlers have also reportedly set a Palestinian home on fire in Jalud. The Israeli regime has intensified its raids across the occupied territories in recent months. Nearly 150 Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli attacks in the West Bank so far this year. Correspondent in Ramallah Mona Kandil joined us earlier with an update on the Israeli raid on the Palestinian village south of the city of Nablus.
Settlers' vandalism against the Palestinians had never come to an end. However, it has been escalating in the recent months. But what happened yesterday on Tuesday is that Israeli settlers have protested and attacked Palestinians in several sites, not only in Jalud. In Jalud, south Nablus, Israeli settlers backed with the big numbers of Israeli soldiers attacked the people. They threw stones, they opened fire, they smashed Palestinians' vehicles and also opened fire at the Palestinians' houses there in Jalut. A number of people had been wounded, and of course Israeli forces were standing, doing nothing. They had even attacked Palestinians as well. They opened fire to disperse the Palestinian protesters, the real owners of the land.
Former agent of the Israeli spy agency Mossad is among four who have died after a boat capsized on an alpine lake in Italy. Italian media have identified the ex-Israeli spy as Shimoni Erez. Two members of the Italian spy agency and for the boat's captain were also among the dead. Italian emergency officials have rejected any foul play, saying the boat was hit by whirlwind on Lake Maggiore. They have, however, cited overcrowding as another factor behind Sunday's incidents, since the vessel exceeded its 15-person limit. Local reports say 10 other serving Mossad agents on board were put on a military plane back to Israel. The Italian security services say that Israeli and Italian spy agents were taking part in a party organized to celebrate the birthday of one of their group members. The United Arab Emirates says it has pulled out of the U.S.-led Combined Maritime Forces Coalition 2 months ago. The UAE Foreign Ministry in a statement said the move was the result of an ongoing evaluation of effective security cooperation with all of its partners. The statement added that Abu Dhabi remains committed to dialogue and diplomatic engagement to advance regional security and stability, as well as to ensure navigation safety in accordance with international law. The U.S. has not commented on the withdrawal of the UAE from the so-called Combined Maritime Forces established in 2001. The coalition is a 34-nation task force which is being supervised by the U.S. Naval Base in Bahrain alongside the American Navy's 5th Fleet and Central Command. The lawyer of Hamid Nouri, an Iranian national jailed in Sweden for alleged rights abuses, says about his situation. Thomas Butstrom says that the court lacks legal jurisdiction to hear the accusation leveled against his client.
First of all, this is a very strange case. I cannot understand why we should have a trial in Sweden about what happened in another country 35 years ago from a person who is not a Swedish person, what he maybe have done to other people who are not Swedes at all. So that nothing to do with Sweden. And
Butstrom said that Nouri's trial has not been, quote, fair and has had so many mistakes. He said some of the witnesses introduced against the defendant have had conflict of interest in the case. The lawyer said that Nouri should be acquitted despite all the evidence brought up against him. Butstrom said that his client lost valuable documents required for defense due to what the court claims to be erasing by mistake. The lawyer slammed Swedish authorities for not allowing Nouri to visit his family members. He said that Nouri is entitled by law to have in-person visitations. Butstrom said that his client has now spent more than 3.5 years in solitary confinement. He said the long period was a, quote, record in Sweden.
And what I am most upset about is that he is almost isolated 24 hours a day. And now he has been there for more than 3.5 years. This will be his fourth summer in custody if they don't let him go out, which I hope they will. But so this is the worst part, because he is isolated for 7 square meters. And, okay, we can come and visit him, but we cannot go more than once a week or once a week, because we are just lawyers and we are working with the case. And he has asked for new glasses so he can read better for, since we came into the case, it's almost 8-9 months. Nothing has happened. So he is treated very bad, and we complain about it all the time. But nothing happened.
Nouri was arrested upon arrival in Stockholm in November 2019. Swedish prosecutors accused him of involvement in the execution of members of the Mujahideen Khalq terrorist organization. The group is responsible for killing at least 17,000 Iranians. Tehran has rejected the accusations against Nouri as politically motivated. On to the U.S. now, where gun violence overshadowed the country's Memorial Day weekend. At least 20 mass shootings, that's right, 20, have taken place across the U.S. during this holiday. A bloodshed was reported in at least 8 U.S. states. In Arizona, a 8-year-old suspect was arrested after going on a rampage in several areas. The assailant took the lives of 4 people. Southeastern state of Florida, 9 people were shot and injured in a mass shooting. Mexico, Illinois, and Arkansas were among other states that reported cases of gun violence during the weekend. According to the Gun Violence Archives, there have been around 260 mass shootings in the U.S. so far this year, with 327 victims killed. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has called on South American countries to create a common currency in the region. Lula said rather than relying on extra-regional currencies, Mercosur, South American trade bloc, should create better compensation mechanisms and a shared unit of transaction for commerce. He also stated that regional development banks should do more to finance social and economic projects. Lula made the remarks at a summit of the Union of South American Nations that has brought together leaders and representatives of the 12-member bloc to the Brazilian capital, Brasilia. This week, 5 foreign ministers of BRICS comprising Brazil, China, Russia, India, and South Africa will meet in Cape Town, South Africa. Among other things, their deliberations will seek to firm up the agenda for the BRICS summit in August. What are the core issues that are expected to be raised in the summit? What makes it an increasingly significant gathering? The South African government has granted diplomatic immunity to officials attending a BRICS foreign ministers meeting this week and the grouping's heads of state summit in August. That move has been in reaction to international criminal court's warrant to arrest the Russian President Vladimir Putin over the war in Ukraine. The 11th day of the lunar Hijri month of Dhu Qada marks the birth anniversary of Imam Reza. The 8th Shia Imam is considered to be one of the most respected, cherished figures in the Islamic world. More in this report from Kabul.
Muslims in Afghanistan have commemorated the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, who is the 8th Imam in Shia Islam and a descendant of Prophet Muhammad.
Imam Reza is popular for his kindness, as one of his nicknames is Ar-Ra'uf, meaning compassionate and kind, and that is not only for Muslims. Even non-Muslims have been blessed many times when calling God by Imam Reza's means.
Imam Reza's holy shrine is located in the northern city of Mashhad, Iran. Each year, about 20 million pilgrims from all around the world visit the glorious shrine. John Ali got the chance to visit the place 45 years ago and has only been dreaming of visiting it since then.
Today we commemorate the birth anniversary of our 8th Imam, because he's our religious leader. I remember my pilgrimage in 1979 and wish to go again soon.
The first time I went pilgrimage, I was so happy. It was an indescribable feeling. When you go there, you feel spiritually relaxed. Since then, I've been going to Mashhad almost every year.
Like all the other imams in Shia Islam, Imam Reza spent his life trying to bring enlightenment to people. He actively warned them about the tyranny and arrogance of his time and was a front-runner in the fight against injustice.
Good and evil are always in battle. Their faces might shift, but battle is always there, and the type of fight differs from time to time. Imam Reza did not go against the enemy armed like Imam Hussein, but his fight was cultural. He was exposing the corruption of the then rulers. We must also try to stand against oppression and injustice, just like Imam Reza did.
The Abbasid ruler of the time, Al-Ma'mun, was not happy with the rising popularity of Imam Reza, as he considered it a threat against his tyrannical governance. That's why he decided to martyr Imam Reza by making him drink poison. Imam Reza spent his life fighting against oppression and injustice. A precious lesson that has no time and boundaries, even after 1,200 years. Abdullah Mirza, the Kabul.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
See you too.
Two men.
Yani?
Bazaar.
Historically, humans lived a colourful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But what brought humans into the valleys and grasslands, and later into a collective society? Some argue wheat domesticated mankind, settling humans permanently next to their fields. Humans have come a long way from traditional farming. Presently, some 38% of the Earth's surface is used to cultivate crops. Technology has revolutionized agricultural production, leading to more food security worldwide.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This time we will explore the agriculture industry. We shine the spotlight on the marriage between technology and science for high-yield agricultural productions. We wanted to see how the agricultural sector is developing new ways to increase the efficiency of natural resource use while also elevating the quality of cultivated food. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's walk through the fields of today's bazaar.
Our quest for answers led us to a company in Khorasan Razavi province that specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechie, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini tubers. So what is a mini tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received three consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress.
36 نفر از
پرسنل ما دارای مدرک تحصیلی بالای کارشناسی ارشد هستند و اینها خیلی کمک ما میکنند در پویایی این مجموعه. به همین ترتیب تمام مجموعه ها افرادی رو از ابتدا شروع کرده تربیت کردن و تحصیل کردن در این مورد و تک تک افراد از ابتدا روی رشته‌های خاص خودشون کار میکردن. از قبل از دیپلمشون برای این کار تأیید شده بودن و تونستن دوره دکتراشون رو در رشته‌ای بگیرن که مورد نظر مجموعه بوده و موضوع گزارششون رو مجموعه براشون تعیین کرده که این گزارش رو این رشته رو بخونن.
As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian.
It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
In case you didn't know, and most don't actually, the country is home to more than 7% of global mineral reserves. That's significant. With over 80 different types of minerals, Iran is one of the top 10 mineral-rich countries globally. In total, the country has about 60 billion tons of proven mineral reserves, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world.
The mining ministry says the total production value in this sector is over $700 billion. This value has not been unnoticed by the government, which has been seriously pursuing several programs promoting the mining sector. Despite its enormous riches, Iran has yet to unlock its full potential as this key sector is still struggling to operate at full capacity. There are several reasons for this. One is a lack of necessary machinery and equipment for expanding this industry. So the government is focusing on geological exploration, extraction, and research of new products as part of areas for development. Another one of the government's programs to increase production is to increase mineral extraction. So organizations have embarked on reviving idle mines. Out of 10,000 mines in the country, around 4,000 of them are idle. It's noteworthy that over the last 2 years, some 500 small-scale idol mines have been brought back to life. That's based on the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. One of the benefits of the ongoing revival plan has been the rise in nationwide employment. Presently, well over 100,000 miners are at work in the sector.
Mining in Iran has more work to be done, and it's still under development. Still, there are plenty of doers in this country and plenty more waiting for further investment opportunities. Iran's productions by far outweigh its domestic use, leaving lots of room for mineral exports. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact.
Figures from Iran's trade promotion organization show a record high of nearly $12 billion worth of minerals and mining products were exported last year. This means there was roughly an 80% increase in exports year on year. Championing the export list in terms of value were steel ingots and related products, copper, aluminium, zinc, and iron. This is a pretty big growth spurt, actually. But government officials say export figures could be much higher if raw materials and other mining products could be further developed with added value. So, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized products in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. The current Iranian calendar year slogan was knowledge-based production and job creation. The title was given by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The goal is to promote and increase support for companies that engineer and produce advanced products that contribute to the economy.
Well, it's that time of the show where I should step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague is actually out there on the field. So, let's see that report.
In the modern world today, both industrialized and developing countries have modern installations capable of highly efficient fabric production. In addition to mechanical improvements in yarn and fabric manufacture, there have been rapid advances in the development of new fibers, processes to improve textile characteristics, and testing methods allowing greater quality control. Today, we visited Aram Takmil Teyfe Faro's company, active in the textile industry in Iran. In this company, there are various activities such as processes of weaving, dyeing, and finishing, and printing of different types of textiles while employing the strongest technical staff as well as modern European dyeing and finishing machines to finally meet customer satisfaction with quality products and innovations. Iran's textile industry has a capacity to produce a wide variety of products suitable for different market segments, both within Iran and across the world. Over the past years, close to 30,000 tons of different types of textile were imported. Presently, however, there are 78 textile factories active in the country, producing 90 million square meters of different kinds of fabric every year. Iran's Development Plan Vision 2025 has identified textile and clothing as one of the potential industries for expansion. The plan basically emphasizes on the need for technological advancements and improvement in productivity.
Thank you.
Many thanks for that awesome adventure, as always. Now, it's time to dive right into some of the latest developments and trends in Iran's agriculture industry. One trend is Iran's agriculture sector. It's a shift towards greenhouse cultivations. Now, a young entrepreneur from Khorasan Razavi province has engineered aeroponic cultivation towers, which can potentially save the country millions on imports.
It is basically an advanced form of hydroponics used in greenhouses. These are vertical circular structures with several openings where plants are placed nutrient-rich liquid, so they efficiently grow more colorful, tastier, and more nutritious produce.
Staying on the topic of trends, farmers have forever battled pests, and some have found better ways to coexist with nature while raising produce. One way is to fight bugs with bugs. A young entrepreneur is marketing his bugs to farmers to reduce pesticide use.
This product is in fact a bunch of tiny insects that are natural predators of certain farm pests that are usually controlled with insecticides. The developers say these creatures only live for a few days, so they don't pose a threat to the natural ecosystem of farms.
Well, that brings us to the end of this edition. I'm Samson Sees. Sees you soon.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Sisters, as you were previously with us in the previous episode, we discussed the necessity of supplication, and we will, in this episode, God willing, have a look at rationale behind supplication. Now, if we put aside the reasons offered by the infallible imams about the necessity of supplication for a moment, and if we somehow concentrate on the rationale behind the necessity of supplication, we will, I assume, definitely conclude that we cannot do anything else except turning towards Allah. Allama Tabatabai, when talking about the verse, "All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds," says, "Thus man possesses only the prestige of worship. This truth does not depend on our awareness of it. Whether we realize it or not, this is an innate and somehow compulsory relation. This is a truth related to man's existence and to other creatures' existence as well. So this is what Allama Tabatabai says about the verse Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Now, for further elaboration, let us refer to the words which Allama Tabatabai has added when talking about this verse. وَلِلَّهِ يَسْجُدُ مَنْ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ And whoever that is in the heavens and the earth makes obeisance to Allah only. Allama Tabatabai says, if in front of Allah, the Almighty, man and the other creatures have no prestige except that of obedience, then what is left for us to carry out is to have a direct relation with Allah. And we have to ask Him for our needs. In fact, if human wisdom could comprehend this truth thoroughly, man would never establish any kind of connection except with Allah. Of course, being effective and affected is inevitable among the creatures, but all these effects are done by Allah's will. So this is the rationale behind supplication that we are discussing. This rational reasoning is enough to convince us to be compelled to pay full attention to the source of the creation, to pay our fullest attention to that source, to that absolute cause. For instance, this verse, say, my Lord would not care for you were it not for your prayers. قُلْ مَا يَعْبَأُ بِكُمْ رَبِّي لَوْلَا دُعَاؤُكُمْ This verse refers to this rational necessity. The establishment of the school of supplication in Islam and the emphasis of the verses and traditions on worshipping Allah all reveal a secret in this school, and it shows how supplication is necessary for our daily lives. This is among the most fundamental and basic issues in the realm of secrets between the Creator and the creatures, which, if enacted, would bring about actions and movements.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az bala va pas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah. Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, the human nature, which is always after gaining of benefits and interests, will demand more if its needs are constantly met. Satisfying all these necessities will call for extraordinary endeavor. In order to satisfy his needs, man resorts to anything possible. But no matter how hard we attempt, there always remains some needs unsatisfied, and I assume we have all experienced that. In this case, man will select one of the two ways. Either he despairs and he resorts to depression, or he attempts frantically. In other words, in order to satisfy his needs, man leaves the human boundary, tries so hard that he may neglect what is good and what is bad, and this is because he is controlled by some whims and desires which have made him blind. This is where we observe the secrets behind the strict recommendations of Islam. We will see that this religion somehow bridges the spiritual mental gaps in man and has provided him with some apparatus through which he may not lose himself in hazardous waves of different needs and necessities, and to be strong against these inevitable temptations, inevitable hardships. Now, dear listeners, it is a fact that man can add up energy to his feebled muscles and join the initiator of all the creation by supplication. So, in this way, he can stand against any problem. He can consider his capabilities above all needs, because now he knows he is connected to someone else, to the all-powerful, to the all-beneficent. This is because he has asked for the assistance of Allah. He has determined to progress because his success is now guaranteed. We should add that human wisdom will not allow man to stand lonely and helpless in the face of the difficult moments of his life and to get along life without using supplication. This is because supplication is the nearest means, the safest way that is in harmony with the divine nature of man. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.